Welcome to MTSU on the Record. I'm Jenna Logue, and we're coming to you from the campus of Middle Tennessee State University in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, and the studios of WMOT-FM. The conventional wisdom in media circles and in academic media circles as well is that the consolidation of a great many broadcast entities under one corporate umbrella has been a detriment to the entire broadcast industry. But is that necessarily true? And if it is true, on what level? If it's not true, why is it not true, and why does the perception persist? We're going to explore that topic today with Dr. Adam Renhoff, who is an assistant professor of economics in the Jennings Jones College of Business here at MTSU. He is the author of a paper published last year, on my birthday as a matter of fact, titled Local Media Ownership and Media Quality, co-authored with Dr. Kenneth C. Wilbur of Duke University. We'll talk about media conglomerates after these words from MTSUnews.com.
Here are some of the stories now on MTSUnews.com, the university's news and information website. An MTSU professor has been voted vice chairman of the Association for Corporate Growth. Doug Tatum, holder of the Wright Travel Chair of Entrepreneurship, was elected to the leadership position of Professionals Concerned with Private Equity on April 23rd in Orlando, Florida. Dr. Cliff Ricketts has been presented with the President's Silver Column Award for his 5 decades of alternative fuels research and exemplary classroom teaching. Ricketts has been a member of the School of Agribusiness and Agriscience for 37 years. And Honors College student Brett Bornhoft of Lee's Summit, Missouri, has earned a 12-week science and engineering fellowship. This summer, Bornhoft will join other undergraduate students from the U.S., the U.K., and Canada for research at Saarbrücken, Germany. For MTSU News at any time, go to MTSUnews.com. That's MTSUnews.com.
Dr. Renhoff, thanks for being with us today.
I'm glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
What you say in your abstract is that television station ownership consolidation, and I'm quoting here, is associated with increased local TV news production but lower news ratings. However, you and your colleague, Dr. Wilbur from Duke University, find that changes in the ownership of local media are not correlated with local media usage or programming. So what impact does this have on the conventional wisdom that cross-ownership of multi-platform media is a bad thing for local news and for service of local markets?
In this study, we kind of look at 4 different things to get a gauge, if you will, at serving as proxies of quality for local media. We look at things like the number of news radio stations in the market. We look at newspaper circulation in the market. We look at the amount of local news on the local television channels. And then we also look at the ratings of local news, with the ideas being that circulation and ratings are kind of measures of satisfaction. You know, all things equal, if people are reading a lot of newspapers in a market, or the ratings for the local news are outstandingly high, then regardless of the ownership and all that, we might consider that to be a high quality. The other one has the other measures, namely the number of new radio news stations and also the amount of local news broadcasting. Those are more like the provision of the different media. And so what we really do is we have a number of measures of ownership and cross-ownership that were provided to us by the FCC, things like information on, in Nashville, Tennessee, how many of the local television stations also own a radio station, or, you know, things of that sort of nature. Are the local television stations locally owned, for example? Mm-hmm. We have these types of information. And what we do is we look at how changes in media ownership are related to changes in these 4 measures, newspaper circulation, et cetera. And so basically, to kind of cut to the punchline that you were quoting from the paper, we really don't find much of anything. And to paraphrase that result, we don't find that changes in media ownership, for example, switching from locally owned to a corporately owned station, we don't find that, again, on average, that this is related to or has a causal relationship with a reduction in local news or a reduction in ratings of the local news or any of these things. We find some very minor effects, but nothing really substantial or indicating that there is a statistically significant relationship. So that's sort of where that conclusion comes from. I mean, we focus on these changes and we just don't see that, hey, when a media ownership variable changes, we don't see any significant corresponding change in any of our outcome measures.
To provide a little bit of background here, it used to be against federal regulations for there to be multiple ownership of humongous numbers of radio, television, and newspaper stations by one company within a certain market. There was a deregulation process that started during the Reagan administration and was extended with the passage by Congress of the Telecommunications Act of 1996, which entitled companies based not in your market to own radio stations, television stations, newspapers, all kinds of media entities within one market. This, in the journalism world, has caused a great deal of consternation because there is concern among working journalists and among journalism professors that this has resulted in a lack of concentration on what really matters to the viewers and the listeners in given markets. In other words, if your corporate headquarters is in San Antonio and San Antonio is telling the television stations in Walla Walla and Richmond and Minneapolis and Orlando what to do, then the mentality of the whole approach to broadcasting is coming out of one corporate headquarters instead of out of each local market. That's basically the counter argument to what you're saying. But you're saying the statistics don't bear that out.
Well, at least not in that regard. As you mentioned, the Telecommunications Act of 96 was really a game changer. They hadn't changed telecommunications rules in this country in, 50, 60 years. And so this was a big change, and it spurred a lot of continual change. I mean, that's 2003 is sort of the year that a lot of people pinpoint as the beginning of unraveling all of this stuff. And, a lot of it is a question about economics versus other goals. And economists get obsessed with things and words like efficiency. Mm-hmm. And sometimes we overlook some of the other things. And so it's not to say that these other elements are not affected. Now, just keep in mind that say with respect to the ratings information that I just gave, that was for television.
Right.
So that was one particular thing. Newspapers have been getting crushed in recent years, not necessarily because of this variety of factors, but if you looked at their readership, maybe you get a different story with regard to other changes. I mean, we didn't find any effect on circulation numbers, but maybe satisfaction is different.
There are different criteria,
sure,
that would not necessarily be looked at by economists. So cross-ownership didn't stop viewers in a particular market from watching their local television stations, as indicated by the Nielsen ratings.
Correct. So if you want to flip that around, it may very well be the case that with corporate ownership or non-local ownership, they have changed the newscasts. We don't see any evidence, at least in our study, that this has led to, say, people abandoning those news broadcasts. If you want to talk about that as a measure of dissatisfaction, it does not appear that overwhelmingly, at least in this context, I'm happy to put caveats on these,
sure,
that at least in this context, it doesn't appear that that's causing them to do it. Now, I actually have a caveat of our own research agenda, if you will.
Okay.
And the problem that we have, that all researchers in this area really face, is that we're basing our assumptions, or our, I shouldn't say our assumptions, our conclusions on measuring changes in ownership. And you mentioned in some of your discussion there that we have, even if you want to consider it to be loosened, we have fairly rigid rules and requirements. regarding who can own what and who can own how many stations and all of those things. So if you want to think of it this way, we're only able to observe changes within a very narrow band. So for example, we don't have a situation where one media company comes into the Nashville, Tennessee news market and buys ABC and CBS affiliates.
Right.
We're not able to observe extreme changes like that. It could very well be that that type of change has some dramatic effect on our measures. We're just not able to say that because as the rules are set up in place, we can't actually observe that. So one of the things that we mention in the closing of the paper is probably the best way to get at some of these would be for the FCC to set up some maybe minor different experiments where they allow different geographic markets to have different rules. Now, I can see political issues of doing things of that nature, but really when you're focusing on these narrow windows, even if there is a change, perhaps we're set up to not find it.
We'll be back with more on MTSU on the Record right after this.
The Intercultural and Diversity Affairs Center helps to promote awareness and understanding of the wide variety of cultures represented at MTSU. The center provides information, referrals, and resources. Additionally, IDAC tries to make students from different cultures feel welcome and comfortable on campus so they can have every opportunity to fulfill their academic, social, and personal potential. For all the latest MTSU news and information, go to mtsunews.com.
We're talking about cross-ownership of broadcast and print media with Dr. Adam Renhoff, who is an assistant professor of economics here at MTSU and co-author of Local Media Ownership and Media Quality with Dr. Kenneth Wilbur of Duke University. How did you define the phrase media quality for purposes of this research?
Well, for us, the media quality are essentially the four things that we sort of report in terms of quality being defined as consumer satisfaction or the amount provided. So we rely on those four measures, the newspaper circulation, the ratings for the local news, the amount of the local news that each station airs, and the number of radio news stations. We define more of any of those four things as being high quality.
Suppose, from an economic point of view, the people who are against large media corporations gobbling up multiple entities within a given market say that this runs counter to the entire concept of the free market system and is tantamount to monopolization. Can you go into some detail about why these companies are not considered monopolies?
The FCC in recent years, and recent could mean more than a decade, but in recent years has softened their viewpoint about exactly what a market is. And by that, I don't mean the geographic element, but I mean the actual media. Now, right now, we're not seeing any movement at this exact moment, but in the very near future, we're likely to see the FCC change their rules on newspaper ownership. It's basically under public comment right now. So we're liable to see them loosen that up. And as an example, why are they doing it? Well, it's part of the new reality that the internet is important and that local newspapers are getting hammered in terms of their circulation and their profits. And so it's sort of a response to this idea that the question isn't, is a market a newspaper in a certain geographic location? It's this idea that it's maybe news in general and that there are multiple news outlets with things like cable television. Now you're battling Hulu Plus and Amazon streaming and all of these things. And so I think some of what we're seeing is that maybe there's a monopolization in some traditional, maybe old school sense, but what the FCC has determined is that the actual market is much broader. And if I could give just one more example, I would say that the XM Sirius satellite radio merger is a perfect example of this. Now, people that were against this, and just as a caveat, I have no indication whether this is good or bad.
He has no dog in this fight.
I have no dog in this fight. That's right. But the people that came out against it said, whoa, 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 you're creating this monopoly. There's going to be only one satellite radio provider. And how can you give your blessing to this if you're the government? But the satellite companies came back and said, look, we're battling regular old terrestrial radio for listeners. We're battling iPods. We're battling, you know, people streaming devices on, you know, Pandora in their car. We're battling all these people. And so, yes, there's one satellite company, but that satellite company is maybe reaching 5% of Americans.
We'll be back in just a moment. And when we come back on MTSU On the Record, we'll be talking about cable television and why you can't always get what you want. Stay with us.
The Tennessee Employment Relations Research Association, or TERRA, gives labor relations specialists and academics a chance to share their views and their data. TERRA wants academics and other interested in human resources and industrial relations to work together at meetings and conferences to strengthen the workplace. Many MTSU faculty belong to TERRA, which has members in 20 states and 7 nations. For all the latest MTSU news and information, go to mtsunews.com.
We're talking with Dr. Adam Renhoff, and we have just finished a discussion on cross-ownership of media. Dr. Renhoff is also the author of a considerable amount of research about a la carte pricing vis-a-vis cable television.
In one of our papers, we have a quote from John McCain that I just really love, that he says, sort of talking on a la carte cable pricing, he says, when I go to the supermarket, I don't have to buy broccoli. I hate broccoli. And that's kind of the standard refrain. You know, why am I paying for channel X when I don't even watch it? Or why do we have to do this? And so there's certainly been some groundswell from consumers regarding this. We find, in terms of predicting the outcome of an a la carte regulation, because that's sort of what it would take at this point. Someone would have to come in and say, look, we're either by a legal ruling of some sort, or, you know, the FCC decreeing something, whatever the case would be, it would probably have to come from the top down here.
It would have to be imposed upon the companies.
Pretty much, yes. But basically our prediction is, in some ways not surprising, but in some ways may be surprising to some listeners, we predict that consumers would benefit from an a la carte regulation. This is perhaps not terribly surprising to anyone that pays for cable. But at the same time, we have a warning, which is that the grass isn't as green as you think it is on the other side. And what we mean by that is that, yes, we predict that consumers, on average, would have a lower monthly cable bill. On the other hand, we also predict that what you pay per channel is likely to skyrocket. In some of our research, we've put that increase in price per channel at maybe on average about 100 to 150%.
Whoa, that's heavy duty.
So, for example, you might be paying, whether you realize this or not, you might be paying $3 to $4 per month for ESPN. The prediction then would be, you know, following an a la carte regulation, you would be free to choose whether or not to buy ESPN, but that it could be the case that ESPN is now priced at, say, $8 to $10.
Say they want ESPN and CNN, and they don't care about anything else. Are we talking about individual pricing for individual customers as opposed to lumping people together as groups of customers according to what they want to watch?
Right. So, I mean, that's sort of the whole idea behind bundling. And so if I were to provide an example, and I'll maybe use ESPN as, again, just verbally as the example, but it this same logic really applies to everything. Now, right now, ABC Disney, who's the owner of ESPN and all those channels.
ESPN2, ESPNU, ESPN Deportes, et cetera,
correct.
Et cetera, et cetera.
Correct. Right now, if you want to think of it this way, they know that everyone that signs up for, say, basic cable or whatever the next tier is, whatever it happens to be on your particular cable provider, they know that that person will be purchasing ESPN. So the price that we generally see if you want to think of it this way, is kind of like a middle average of what people value ESPN at. So I love sports, and so maybe if you gave me Truth Serum, I would say I would pay $12. And someone else says, nah, I don't like sports that much, I'd pay 50 cents. And so you, if you had these responses from everyone, it's kind of like the price that they're charging now would be kind of the average of all those price quotes. Okay.
Yeah, it would be less total than what you're paying now for the bundle, but it would be higher than what you would ordinarily pay for that particular channel, ESPN, as part of the bundle.
Now, and that's exactly right. So now with a la carte, strip away all the people that don't really like sports. They're out of it. Unless ESPN's being given away for 5 cents or free or something, yeah, they'll just opt out of it.
Not bloody likely with ESPN.
Right. So now you're left with the only people that you're trying to price and target are sports enthusiasts. And those people on average are going to have a much higher willingness to pay for ESPN than when we were sort of doing that, looking at the population and shooting an arrow in the middle. Mm-hmm. So that's sort of where you get the increase, say, of 100 to 150%. Now you're going to be pricing towards the people that are predisposed to buy that. And so it will be the case that tons of people won't buy ESPN or Food Network or HGTV or whatever network you like to insert. But the people that are left in the market for that channel are going to be the ones that really value it.
We'll take one more brief break and be back with more on MTSU on the Record right after this.
MTSU's Jewish and Holocaust Studies minor offers undergraduate students a chance to study the culture and religion of the Jewish people and the Holocaust in an interdisciplinary program. Studies include history and culture, theology and philosophy, and the arts and social sciences. Courses tackle vital topics central to local and global awareness, including multiculturalism and the meanings of diversity, religious tolerance, and genocide. For the latest MTSU news and information, go to mtsunews.com.
Concluding our discussion with Dr. Adam Renhoff, would the less popular cable channels just sort of go by the wayside, survival of the fittest?
Right. So that's a really good question that no one really knows the full answer to. I think the answer is generally yes. I don't think anyone's under any sort of expectation that were we to institute a la carte pricing, that, you know, everyone would still be, every channel would still be available, and you would just still have these 500 possible channels you could choose from. It's very likely that even if you charged a higher price, you would have lower number of subscribers, and it's certainly possible that a number of channels couldn't survive anymore. That just to cover their programming costs and all that, even though they're getting more per subscriber, they have so many fewer subscribers that it just no longer works. And so that's one reason, sometimes it surprises people to hear this, but the cable companies are actually not the ones opposed to a la carte. Now, maybe they were in the beginning, but I think going on my theme that we were talking about with the media ownership stuff, which is this great change that's happening and redefining markets and introducing new competitors, I think maybe cable used to be opposed to it, but now they're seeing people that just want, say, Hulu Plus or Netflix or whatnot, and they, I think, are more keen to do it than perhaps they have been in the past. The actual ones that are putting up the roadblock, if you will, are the actual network owners. Because the way it works now is that, and I'll go back to ABC Disney, if you want to carry ESPN, you have to carry all of those channels. ESPN News, you mentioned ESPN Deportes, all these things. Now you can ask yourself the mental question, how many of those channels would survive on their own? Probably relatively few.
Yeah, because they appeal to niche audiences.
Correct.
By their very definition.
Correct.
ESPN Deportes is totally in Spanish. If you don't speak Spanish, you're probably not going to watch it.
Correct.
But wouldn't that leave the strongest channels in a position of power because their stock would go up, and that would be healthier for them and for the economy, and the consumer presumably would get what he or she wants, because even if you're paying 100% to 150% more for the channel that you want than you would have if it were part of the bundle you used to get, wouldn't you still be paying less? And you said that in your most recent research, the cable profit only, you found the cable profit only went up just a little bit. So where is the real downside to this?
That's a very good question. I mean, if I were to pinpoint the real downside, so just to kind of paraphrase, you're absolutely correct. Consumers would be better off. I've sort of highlighted these price increases, and that's accurate. But that's just my way of saying, don't get too excited. Your cable bill is not going to go from 120 to 20.
Right.
For most people. Mm-hmm. Certainly it would for some. It's more likely maybe it goes from 120 to 80 or 90. Okay, which is still a savings. Yeah. Okay, and so that's why we say consumers benefit. They, even if they pay more per channel, they're going to buy fewer channels, and their bill will be less. So consumers are better off. Even though it's not a lot, you're right, cable companies look to be at least a little bit better off. Now, one unknown is whether there's a big technological hurdle of how expensive it would be to roll out software and all that to do this. But they look a little better off. The loser in this is really in some ways the one that controls it, and that's the networks, the owners of the networks. And so as long as Viacom, you know, forces DirecTV or Comcast or whoever to get MTV and CMT and VH1 and VH1 Hits and all of the other Viacom properties, they'll be okay. It's when they're worried about it going away that the issue arises. There is a caveat to that, and that's that Viacom's actually being sued right now by Cablevision, who's essentially seeking a federal judge to tell them that they have to let them pick and choose. And if that happens, we may see a la carte come, you know, faster or without, say, the FCC involvement.
Especially if it goes all the way to the Supreme Court. Correct. And the Supreme's side on that.
Correct. But it could also be that it lessens price competition and we actually see further price increases. This is all sort of long term, and again, there's so much uncertainty, it's hard to tell.
What piqued your interest in doing economic research into media in the first place?
Yeah, that's a good question. I guess you could call me maybe a child of the MTV generation. You know, growing up, MTV showed music videos and nothing else, and cable television was growing. And, you know, I remember having the TV where you had the A and B box for cable on the top, and you mm-hmm. turned a dial to change the channel. And, you know, sort of remember these old glory days of cable. And I think I've always been interested in sort of music and media and all of that. And to be honest, when you're engaged in long-term research projects that may, from conceiving the idea to a publication, maybe 3, 4, 5 years, I think you have to just genuinely be interested in what it is you're researching and sort of get some energy out of your interests.
So, because crunching the numbers can be so tedious, you might as well do it about something you love or you'll be bored to tears.
Exactly. And there's a lot of things that I don't know that I could have researched for long periods of time, but I've really enjoyed looking at these issues.
We really appreciate your insights, and thank you for being with us today, Dr. Adam Renhoff.
Oh, thank you very much. It's been my pleasure.
MTSU On the Record, a news and information program about Middle Tennessee State University, is produced by the university's Marketing and Communications Office, which is solely responsible for its content. Read more about MTSU at our website, mtsunews.com. Podcasts of this program are available at mtsunews.com and on iTunes.